Women Worldwide with Deirdre Breckenridge introduces incredible stories shared by women across the globe who have experienced the great heights of success and, at times, the agony of defeat. With a vision to impart wisdom and advice on how to tackle barriers and soar to new heights, the show uncovers different perspectives to help you find your inner strength and to power up your own voice so you can excel in life.
Welcome to Women Worldwide. I'm your host, Deirdre Breckenridge, bringing you more stories about incredible women who share their knowledge and let you in on their amazing experiences, all to help you learn and grow along the way. My special guest today is Jane Karwoski, also known as Dr. J. Dr. J has been involved with the Social Network show since its inception as a partner and host. Through the show, Dr. J brings thought leaders in social networking to the public in a format that's entertaining as well as informative. In earning a doctoral degree in experimental psychology, Dr. J combines social, cognitive, and health psychology, focusing on the influence of key opinion leaders in spreading best practices. Prior to the availability of formal online social networking tools, she developed Genomicus Americus, an e-newsletter connecting North American and South American social scientists studying genetic and genomic issues. So, Dr. J, it's a pleasure to have you on my show today. Welcome.
Well, thank you. Thanks for inviting me, Deirdre.
Oh, anytime. Boy, that was a mouthful. Genomicus Americus and how far we've come, right? So, you know, let's start off. Maybe you could just explain a little bit about this experimental psychology and what exactly is that?
Yeah, it's not something most people really hear about, but when they hear the word psychologist, they generally think of therapy, right? Helping people with problems of one kind or another, anywhere from adjusting to life situations to dealing with chronic major mental illness in hospitals. But that is just a small part of the spectrum, and it is called clinical or sometimes counseling psychology. Experimental, though, as an umbrella term, can be thought of as anything other than clinical, working with people, and it takes in a lot of territory. Developmental, cognitive, neuropsychology. Some of the first neuroscientists were psychologists, and social psychology, all involved in research to develop a knowledge base, which can be useful to the clinical psychologists. But other examples are human-computer interaction. There's marketing psychology and so forth. So it can be quite a few things. But getting a PhD in any field is meant to transform one from a consumer of knowledge to a producer of knowledge, doing research to answer questions. But I think it's vital for any researcher to be able to answer the question, so what?
Right.
Great question. Yeah, the time and resources used are just too scarce to be devoted to purely esoteric questions that no one but other researchers cares about. And so that is, you know, a lot of research seems to be written just for other researchers to read because it's in a sort of a special jargon, you might say. But this is where I stand back and wonder, well, what if we put a moratorium on all research worldwide for 2 to 3 years and everyone focused on using what we've learned so far? This, of course, is an impossibility. For one thing, the research enterprise is inextricably tied to huge economic concerns. Governments, other funders tend to pull research funds that aren't used year by year. But if you humor me for a moment and consider how crucial it is to spend time and money on diffusing innovation, and that's the focus of my podcast, the socialnetworkshow.com, to popularize, if you will, research findings on issues related to social media networks and the internet in general, the emerging technology of information and communication.
Well, there are certainly no shortage of issues, right, related to social media networks and emerging technology. So what is it that interests you the most about social networking and these online communities, which are proliferating daily?
Well, that information and communication technology, it's one of quite a number of emerging technologies that are changing, progressing at breakneck speed. Others include nanotech, biotech, robotics, applied cognitive psychology, in other words, brain waves that can, you know, studying that. In fact, up to 35 different emerging technologies have been identified and counted. But the impact that even just the info communication tech is having on us economically, socially, personally, can't be overemphasized. Parents are acutely aware of this. And many of my... really?
As am I, right?
this is the brave new world, right? So many of my guests focus on solutions related to parenting in the digital age. And as a society, as a nation, and a global community of humans, you know, this is humanity as a whole we're talking about. We have got to attend to the ethical, legal, and social implications of these technologies. Now, do I think we will? No one can predict that. Sometimes things look pretty dismal, but history is full of amazing surprises that contradicted everything that a purely logical viewpoint might have indicated. Thank goodness, or we wouldn't be here still. But, you know, Ted Koppel is a famous broadcaster, of course, and has won almost every award there is to win. And he has recently written a book called Lights Out. And it is because he did investigative reporting on the public infrastructure, such as the energy grid, and how vulnerable it is to cyber attack. So what's interesting is he was asked how much difference did he think his new book would make? And he said, not much. Not much, because he explained that to heed what he is saying requires action. It is just easier to disbelieve what he's saying, listen to people who are going, no, there's no problem, because that doesn't require doing what's needed to make changes.
So when you hear somebody like Ted Koppel, who many of us know, say not much, I guess my question to you is then, what keeps you working on it?
Well, and probably the same thing that kept him working on it. You have to have modest expectations, because otherwise you're bound to be greatly disappointed. But I found that doing something rather than nothing is therapeutic, for one thing. I found myself so overwhelmed by the specter of the fearful things coming on planet Earth. You know, this is just one tiny sliver. You look at the economic situation worldwide, the political situation, conflicts and everything. It was just crushing me. But the old saying, the best defense is a good offense, it proved true here too. I had to find the right level to fight this on. As I dug into the more cosmic aspects, I guess I would say, like, is technology going to change what it means to be human? I found so many people working on the intersection of internet and society, researchers, institutes, centers, that I was encouraged in spite of myself. But it's really the angle, to me, what fascinated me or grabs me the most is how law and ethics can influence the outcome. That's what I can really sink my teeth into. So I've been gravitating toward experts on that for my guests and so forth. We don't have to let these profit-driven innovators have their way with us. Corporations, it really reminds me of the Robert Barron age and the progressive politics of Teddy Roosevelt and so forth, that age where the railroads were just trampling on individual rights and all these other Standard Oil, etc. And I see the same thing happening in high tech. But so you know, we need to realize and spread the word that, you know, we don't have to just lay down and let this happen. We may feel like the voice crying in the wilderness a lot of the time, but when you see things that make you mad, you know, fighting mad, going on the offense, don't you think going on the offense empowers you?
Oh, definitely. And do you have examples, maybe?
Well, what I think of, there's two areas, there's lots of areas actually, but one that's on the minds of a lot of people, I'm glad to say, is privacy. And when we see what the movers and shakers in the social network realm and so forth have tried to promote, you can see that it's in Mark Zuckerberg's economic self-interest, for example, to convince us that privacy is just a social norm to be changed. Or Scott McNeely of Sun Microsystems was famously quoted as saying, "You have zero privacy. Get over it." Well, no, no, no. To quote the the Supreme Court, privacy is a right so rooted in traditions and conscience of our people as to be ranked as a fundamental right. So when you look at what ethicists and legal scholars are saying on this, there's no question that privacy is still a fundamental right. This is just a sort of the hype that's fed to us by people who stand to gain economically by promoting this, and not just economically. The idea that, oh, we want the whole world to be open and transparent, and, you know, I don't know, that's really in la-la land, because we have people that are eager to take advantage. There's the criminal element. There's the capitalistic or corporate element that is just profit motivated. So if they can get away with trampling on people's rights or convincing us we don't need those rights, then we're really leaving the door open, and the foxes are going to be living in the hen house pretty soon, or if they're not already.
Exactly.
Then another one is security. We're all used to getting updates and fixes and patches for our computers and so on. And I don't know about you, but I just kind of took this as, oh, well, that's, you know, that's the way it works. Well, sloppy code is responsible for vulnerabilities. A vulnerability or an exploit, something that can be exploited, it happens because of the rush to get new versions, new gadgets to market. And this whole culture, and it's the public is really part and parcel of it, wanting the latest, seeing what's new, etc. It makes for sloppy work. So the patches are available because mistakes have been found, usually by criminals, I might add. They're usually exploited and people get hacked. And then they say, oh, there's a problem. We better fix it. So companies could spend more money to better proofread. I doubt if that's the term they use, but to me, it's proofreading the code, or at least offer better rewards for finding and reporting vulnerabilities before they're exploited by the bad actors. That's something that can be done, but a lot of us don't even know that's possible.
That's so true. You pointed out two really important examples. I'm talking with my special guest, Jane Karwoski, also known as Dr. J, an experimental psychologist and the host of the Social Network Show. In the next segment, Dr. J will discuss more about social networking, online communities, and her work.
You have been listening to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge. Segment two is coming right up.
Creating brand loyalty requires a unique blend of strategic communications and innovative technology. Pure Performance Communications works with businesses to move their audiences from interest to action, giving you a roadmap that fosters deeper engagement and forges stronger relationships along the way. Visit us at pureperformance.com. Thank you.
Now, back to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge.
I'm Deirdre Breckenridge, host of Women Worldwide. Welcome back to the show, where Jane Karwoski, also known as Dr. J, and I were just chatting about social networking, online communities, and even privacy. So, Dr. J, you had stated something about parents and families. Yeah. And, you know, from your research and some of the guests you've interviewed, can you give an example of the solutions related to parenting in the digital age?
Yes. It's always nice to have something specific rather than just a generality. I'd recommend going to thesocialnetworkstation.com/blog and scroll down to the search bar and enter Englander to find the episodes where I interview Dr. Elizabeth Englander, the founder of the Massachusetts Aggression Reduction Center. She's a developmental psychologist, a former teacher, mother of three teenagers, and the wife of a school principal. So she has many types of credentials on this. She has...
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah, you want them practice tested, right?
Yes.
It's always interesting to listen to researchers who have it all in theory, such as
right, exactly, and not practiced.
Well, she has what I think are the best thought out and tested approaches to digital parenting. And as an example, she cites the importance of protecting family time, such as just one family meal where all devices are turned off and stowed away, even when this costs something in terms of children's activity schedules. Now, ideally, that would be every day, but, you know, maybe some families, the best they can do is once a week. But it's amazing to me, Deirdre, how if something is regular, what a big impact can make in a child's life. And so that would be an example, something to where it is family time. And she gave the example of one of her children was doing very well in a particular type of martial arts, and then they changed this time schedule and it interfered with their family meal. And they had to do some serious thinking about it because they thought it was doing their child well and the kid was enjoying it and everything. But they finally said, you know what, nothing else is going to work for us. Family is important too. It's every bit as important as any other activity, extracurricular activity that we could come up with. And so I'm sure they made some kind of adjustments in what was available for recreation and activity like that. But the bottom line was family time has a priority. Then another thing she mentioned, she's the author of a book, Bullying and Cyberbullying, What Every Educator Should Know. And she was talking about how in school, but I think this would apply in parenting too, rather than say when we're dealing with kindness, you know, and somebody comes up with something that just is mean toward another child, instead of saying, well, how do you think Susie feels when you say that? It's more effective to just simply say that is not acceptable in our home or in our family or in our school. We don't act like that. So you are offended, not Susie. I mean, she may be offended too, but the point is it's a standard that everybody's involved in, and that is reflective of developing a positive school climate. So she emphasized, you know, the need to just stop what you're doing and address this. When
that
things
is excellent.
Yeah. So like I say, she gave many other ideas. There's parenting by age and stage, and has a wonderful amount of information there for us. And you can find that, as I said, on the socialnetworkshow.com in the blog is where you can find this, the search, and even on my show, if you go to the Social Network Show specifically, there's an archive of the programs by speakers, so by guests. So Elizabeth Englander is there, and you can access whatever she has to say on that.
Well, in this digital age, it is so important for parents to have access to this type of information and to really stick to the standards. And I am 100% with you on that family time that has to be protected. So let's switch gears a little bit. Well, you just mentioned your show, the Social Network Show. Why are you podcasting instead of going through traditional radio? What is it about podcasting?
Well, it's on demand. You know, we have on demand everything these days, and this is no different. It's on demand audio, and it's entrepreneurial. You don't have to fit into programming or get anyone's permission or buy into it. You just do it.
So no, I love that.
That's the advantage.
That is definitely a great advantage. And what advice would you perhaps give to anyone who wants to start podcasting because they have a passion? You know, maybe they want to speak out on a topic or share their life's work. Well, what would they do?
Well, in the interest of full disclosure, I will add that our company, Social Network Intermedia Incorporated, is a full-service podcast production company. So if you have a budget and you want a short learning curve, in other words, you don't have time to start learning the whole art of podcasting and audio production, etc., send an email to questions@thesocialnetworkshow.com to get more information. And on the other hand, if you are long on time but short on funds, we'd still like to hear from you and see what we can do to help. I will say this, it makes much more sense to record your podcast and then upload it rather than using some of the broadcasting live services. The whole idea is on-demand audio. So to limit your listeners to those who can tune in at a certain time on a particular day of the week is irrational, in my opinion. Assuming that you are new at expressing your thoughts verbally to an invisible audience, it puts tremendous demand on you to perform live. It's great to be able to do a retake or edit out any bloopers too, of course.
Yes.
And Deirdre, the biggest challenge to podcasters is building an audience. So if a person already has built a loyal following, that puts them miles ahead. Podcasting can be an adjunct to whatever you're doing, like a blog and so forth. And that will be a big step forward. We have an audience builder technology. There is also that helps in increasing downloads tremendously. And podcasting also puts you in a smaller pond, as it were, because the last stats I heard about this is that there is one female podcaster for every 3,600 female bloggers. So
wow.
It is a smaller pond for sure. And it's a natural adjunct, like I say, to a blog or other means of your business. You know, you're using it as an adjunct to your PR business, right? So,
yes.
You can testify to that it adds another dimension to your interaction with your customers.
Definitely.
As far as concrete suggestions, I'd say sketch out what you want to envision or what you do envision your podcast to be about, the principal domain, then the subdomains. I sent you something about that with regard to the Social Network Show, and it's great food for thought and helps you plan. I'm a big fan of mind mapping also that can be used.
Yeah,
so,
very helpful.
Yeah, and you can determine whether you want to use it to educate or to entertain or a combination of both, whether you want to be the main act or feature relevant guests. But in any case, you need to be ready for the long haul and hard work to help listeners find you. There are people out there that will be crazy about your content, but they need to find you. And that does not seem to happen automatically.
No, it does not.
The build it and they will come philosophy has disappointed thousands of people. So quality of your delivery and quality content is necessary, but not sufficient. You have to add those great ideas and then the hours to implement them. And many times, depending on your budget, it will be you that's doing that. And of course, many, because of this lead time it takes to develop it and then monetize it, it's something that is done on the side, you might say, or in addition to your main livelihood. It's not something people can just jump into and say, oh, I'm going to make a living at this.
Right. Well, hard work, dedication, I'm going to add those two in, but oh, so gratifying. It really is. So, you know, after hearing so much of what you're doing, your research, you're on the show, you're a host, you have several positions, no doubt, and you wear many hats. You know, what is your favorite area of work and why?
Well, I have to say that whatever I'm doing or am doing at the time is my favorite. and I have delved into a lot of different things and gone gung-ho, and then, you know, after a while, okay, that's good, I've done that now, what is next? I used to bemoan the fact that I had not found my one true livelihood early on and developed a great body of work, advanced in the field, gained a solid reputation, yada yada. But really, just a few years ago, it dawned on me that I'm an explorer, not a homesteader. You know, both are great, just different. And just as the westward movement, as an illustration in America, was a lot of people just looking for their home, and they found it, and that's where they stayed. The explorers, on the other hand, would enjoy where they are and then say, what's over the next mountain? So right. I'm fascinated by something until I get my head around it, master it to a modest degree, usually, and then I want to move on and discover something new. I don't go looking for it usually. It usually finds me. There are skills, though, that you develop as you go along, and hopefully they accumulate over time, and many lessons learned can be applied to entirely different problems. And that's what creativity is, really, seeing how one thing applies to another when it hasn't been applied there yet. So it's kind of fun.
Well, you are definitely an explorer. So when you're not working, which sounds you do work a lot and explore, what do you do to relax and to rejuvenate?
Well, I change location. I've never been one to compartmentalize my life effectively. My work involves thinking, and there's no way to say, okay, now I'm not going to think. At the end of last year, I rented an apartment. It's midway between the condo I own with my husband of several decades and the home of my business partner, so it's super convenient, as I was driving right by it anyway. And when I open that door, I just enter my oasis. My mind clears. I can either truly relax or work without the distraction of something that needs to be done around the house, which I like doing.
Oh, it sounds amazing.
I really do like puttering around the house, so that is
sure.
It's a temptation, you know. And I've tried renting office space, and it just didn't work for me because what I do for work has always been sort of an inseparable part of me. So it's funny how common it is for people these days to live together without being married, and yet it is still very rare to be married without living together for 7 days a week.
Right, you definitely make a point there. I mean, it sounds like the perfect arrangement, but have there been any drawbacks to this arrangement?
Well, my dog would probably say there is.
Oh.
he's a three-dog night kind of guy. Two is the loneliest number since the number one. So he likes the three of us together. But after I've left him with this doggy daddy overnight, he's glued to me as I go out the door the next time. And I remember reading a magazine article a few years ago by a woman with several children who remarried a writer. And he kept his apartment and she and the kids kept their home. And I thought, boy, that's a great solution. And, you know, I think it would probably improve the success rate of step families.
Well, there you go. and that would be a good rate to improve, I'm sure. So, Jane, last question. Where can my listeners find out more about you and your work?
Well, my podcast is on thesocialnetworkstation.com, just like Women Worldwide. And on the blog tab, you can find the episode and leave a comment of whatever episode you want. On the top of every player, it says more episodes, and that gives you a nice list of topics. My Twitter handle is @socialnetshow2, the number 2. And I'm on LinkedIn, Jane Karwoski. And questions@thesocialnetworkshow.com is the email.
Fantastic. Dr. Jay, thank you very much for joining us today and for sharing your thoughts about social networking, online communities, and all of the wonderful exploration that you're doing.
Thank you, Deirdre. My pleasure.
Oh, well, my pleasure, too. And I'd also like to thank everyone for tuning into Women Worldwide. I'm your host, Deirdre Breckenridge. And until we meet again for our next episode, stay focused, energized, and feeling empowered. Thank you.
You have been listening to Women Worldwide with Deirdre Breckenridge, brought to you by Pure Performance Communications on thesocialnetworkstation.com. You can reach Pure Performance at www.pureperformancecom.com. Women Worldwide is produced by SNI, and the opinions of the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect those of Social Network Intermedia, LLC, or The Social Network Station.